Hello and welcome to Padding Ain't Easy, Guardians of the Galaxy Review Special. I'm your host, Carl Pearce, and with me, as always, is the group to my Rocket Raccoon. It's Scott McLeod, everybody.
I am Groot. which in Groot speak is translated to, fuck you.
That was a nice one this week.
Yeah, I know. I need to find something funny for it to translate to. Because obviously Groot, every time he says it, means something different. But I was on the spot, so fuck it.
So Scott, before we crack on, how are you and how far away are you from your 1 billion steps?
I'm well past the 400,000 mark from last I tallied it up. So yeah, I'm getting there. I think within the next week and a half, I can get to 500,000 if I really keep it up, which is cool. Because every so often they have real little milestones and they tell you, oh, this is the equivalent of walking from this place to this place. Like the last one I got 350,000 said, oh, that's the equivalent of walking from Nottingham to London. Don't know how you calculate that, because I think we do not have someone to have to walk that far to tell you. Like, who's sitting in Nottingham thinking, I might go to London if I fancy a walk.
Well, they must have their ways. I mean, people used to have to do these journeys by foot back in the olden times, Scott.
And I'm sure you hated your weekly commute. Like, I'd love to go to the shops, but I don't fancy walking, 50 miles just for my next loaf of bread.
Oh, nightmare it was, mate. It was stale by the time I got it home, usually.
It was freshly made when you got it, but by the time you got home, it was bluer than the bag you put it in. But yeah, I'm getting there. Got all in a couple of weeks, right from the time I booked my holiday from work. So as I said, yeah, I'm kind of counting down the days to my holiday. And I'm sure during that week off, I can get a fair bit of walking in as well.
Well, I expect you to walk from Glasgow to London to get your steps in, young man.
I'm not walking all that way. I'm not the bloody Proclaimers. But how are you, Carl? Since you asked.
Yeah, no, I'm not bad, thanks, mate. Just, not doing any extra steps or anything. So, just everything's normal at the moment, to be honest.
Fair enough. Yeah.
Sorry, I can't give the listeners anything more interesting.
He lives a very quiet, simple life, does our Carl. He's either waiting by the computer to record something with one of us, or he's in the shop thinking of anything he can take home for himself.
Pretty much all on the PlayStation.
Are you playing anything at the moment?
Just some Hitman 3.
Cool. I'll just nod along. I've watched my brother play a bit of Hitman 3 one time, and that's as much as I know about it. I know I tried to play it myself. I think it was that, or it may have been, I can't remember if it was that I tried to play or if it was Hitman Absolute, but I'll try to go around some marketplace. And literally I was hiding behind this corner trying to lure a guard in, and the slightest noise I made, just fucking all of a sudden this guy's, whether I'm hid or not, this guy keeps coming around the corner and trying to shoot me. I was not very good at that game.
It can take a bit of getting used to. Especially the newer ones. They're a bit different. Shoot your way out of trouble. You need to be a bit sort of more subtle, I suppose.
Yeah. But anyway, I enjoy you doing these shows, Carl. It's obviously the Rogue Opinions way. It's the last review you want in and the last one you get. And, the way Disney Plus goes around with the uploading of the most recent MCU films, we finally get to talk about Guardians 3. Because Carl still can't make that long, arduous trek to his nearest cinema. But I wanted to ask before we go into this, was there much about this film that you didn't know about going into it? Was there anything that you might have seen online or heard people talking about from the film?
No, I mean, a lot of these films, because I don't watch them as soon as they're out in the cinema, because, yeah, unless it's something I'm really keen on or looks really good, I can't really be asked to go now, because I live in a, as I keep saying, I live out in the sticks. I mean, there's, and there's quite a track away, and I just can't kind of be out of it nowadays, because I'm going to pay for the journey to get there, then pay for the cinema ticket, and it's, you know, it's expense I just can't be arsed with either. But getting back on track, no, I've been quite lucky with most films. Not many have been spoiled for me too massively. Yeah, nothing really with this one. There was something that did confuse me a little bit, which I'll get to in due course. But yeah, even with Quantumania, another films we've reviewed sort of late on, for lack of a better word, yeah, not too much has got spoiled for me, thank goodness. And even if it has, it's because I've got bored of waiting and sort of gone out of my way to search for it. So, yeah, no, I wouldn't say there's any massive spoilers in this, unless there's something I missed.
No, not in terms of like massive spoilers, but like when a film like comes out like this one, which, because I think a lot of people are hated about this despite Quantumania coming out a few months before it and being a bit pants, let's just say. Because I think obviously Guardians had a bit better track record before, and there were the previous two films, and also being the wrap-up and everything, people were very intrigued about it. So it seems to be for me, when it comes to these films, if I don't go and see it in the first couple of days, I'm still obviously avoiding any mentions of it online, because there'll be something about it that gets memed, or there'll be something about it at one point about it that people want to talk about, and I need to avoid anything with the word, even the slightest reference to the word Guardian, the next day. Like, obviously, I know you've not seen Across the Spider-Verse, but there's literally something about I knew it was about Spider-Verse, but I didn't know what it was, but I've seen people constantly talk about it online. I kept trying to avoid any further context of it, and then I remember it popped up in the film, like, ah, that's what people are talking about. Because obviously the age of me, people be like, as soon as they've seen the film like this, they're like, right, I must talk about it. I'll just put this thing out there. I don't care how many people who follow me have seen it or not.
Another thing which sort of helps or doesn't help in a way is that some films with their trailers spoil stuff as well, don't they? So you sometimes know someone's going to, a secret cameo or something, you'd have thought they'd have kept secret was going to happen because they put it in the trailer, whether they meant to or it slipped past the editors. I don't know.
Yeah, I remember like really wanting to get out to see this as soon as possible, because of everything like Marvel's done recently, this is something I was like very amped up to watch, and I enjoyed getting to watch it back most recently for this episode. Well, I even went on Spotify and downloaded a couple of the songs that are featured on the soundtrack for this film, because as we mentioned on our Team Godfather's favourite films episode, I found out after I made my list, I seem to have a weird thing with films with a really solid soundtrack, and obviously when it comes to James Gunn, he just packs his films with tune after tune.
Yeah, especially with Guardians, where you get a good portion of sort of 80s sort of music. But yeah, I think a good score and a good soundtrack can really help make or break a movie sometimes. I mean, one of the reasons I really enjoyed Atomic Blonde is because with some of the 80s bangers and that were in the movie. Not just because of Charlize Theron to stay on gimmick.
where do we want to start with this one? Because let's just say, I'll admit it right now, there are some scenes in this film that are absolutely fucking harrowing, and I nearly teared up in this. I don't cry at movies a lot, not because I'm heartless, but sometimes I understand when moments are very emotional, but they don't always move me to tears. You know, weirdly, the last time I was in a cinema and I felt that I might cry was during Tony Stark's funeral in Endgame. And then there was one of the flashback scenes in this, oh, it nearly had me going. And then I was watching this film, and one of the previous flashbacks that leads to that, but I started feeling like a lump in my throat because I knew what was coming. Like, I don't want to live through this again.
I mean, I've got more sort of emotional watching films, and as I've got older, I used to be quite sort of heart of stone when I was younger, and nothing sort of fazed me or made me well up. But now, yeah, I do get a lot more emotional with these scenes. I find series gets me more emotional than films, probably because. Especially if a character dies, you spent longer with that character because, you know, they could have been with you for two or three seasons before they've got written out or they've decided to leave, so they've killed them off. So if it's sort of filmed and whatnot, well enough, that can really hit you emotionally more than a film because you've only spent a couple of hours with a character. But with, obviously, the Guardians cast, you've spent a lot longer than a couple of hours because this is the third sequel, and of course they've shown up in other films as well, like Avengers, and even at the start of the latest Thor film as well, they had a bit of a cameo. So that kind of gives you a bit more time with these characters, make more of an emotional connection with them. I suppose you've got to start at the beginning, really, or very close to the beginning, because it pretty much starts really, really quick as we get introduced to Adam Warlock pretty much straight off the bat, and he just starts kicking the absolute bejesus out of our heroes without much trouble, really, to be fair. But he's quite, you know, he's quite a powerful character physically straight off the bat, and it's a really good sort of opening few minutes that sets the film off at a really good pace, I think.
Yeah, definitely. Before I talk about that, I just wanted to go back to some of your points earlier on. Like, I agree with you in terms of, like, TV gets you a lot more, like, hell, even old TV shows that have been out for years, they still, some of the moments still get you. Like, I remember two, like, older TV shows, there are a few moments that still get me when I watch them. Not really feel like crying, but I do choke up a little bit. One is the final broadcast on Frasier and that finale, and the scene in Fresh Prince that's always shared every so often on my social media timeline for some reason, so I keep having to fucking face it. The scene where Will has that breakdown when his father comes back and then he leaves again, which is very emotional. Mm. But like I said, like, with films, like, yeah, it's only as I've started, you know, getting further on in my 20s and everything, that I've started getting emotionally, and that kind of emotional reaction, because I remember I was a teenager, I went to go see, might have been just about 20 teens, I can't remember when the film came out, but Marley and Me is always talked about as a very bit of tearjerker, like the ending of that especially. I went with my mum and a friend of mine from school who was a girl, and I was sitting on either side of them. They, and at the end of that film, they are bawling their eyes out. I'm just kind of looking at them like, it's a sad thing, but I did not feel the urge to cry whatsoever. I'm thinking, like, am I being emotionally, am I heartless here for not crying at this?
Yeah, I don't think it's that. I think it's, you know, how you've connected with the characters, I suppose, if you haven't made much, for whatever reason, if you haven't really made much of an emotional connection to that character, it's not going to affect you as much. Like, Tony Vets is, if you go to our last pod, where we talked about our favourite series, my favourite was Angel, and there's a character death halfway through the first season that every time I rewatch it, I still get a lump in my throat because it's so well done and it's just so emotional the way this character dies, sort of saving the day.
Yeah, but in terms of this open, like you said, because it goes from like very like somber, like with Rocket, the established jug going around nowhere, Rocket listening to Creep by Radiohead, everything. Despite obviously what happened in the end of the Guardians of the Galaxy special, Quill is right back to being depressed, and he's bringing Sylvie there. They put him to bed and everything. And then, as just everything's kind of settled down, then boom, in comes Adam Warlock. After a little happy thing where Groot misunderstands what they meant when he said to Mantis, can't you put your hand on him and make him happy? It was a bit funny. But then, yeah, he comes in, that wakes Peter up, and Peter feels responsible later on for what happens to Rocket, because he's like, if he hadn't been drunk, he would have been awake and a lot more alert and could have saved Rocket. But I do like the bit where, because Adam is much as developed he is physically, they mentioned he's got taken a cocoon too early, so he hasn't really reached emotional or mental maturity, so he loses sight of Rocket, goes, where did you go, squirrel?
Yeah, as the movie goes on, yeah, you sort of learn, as you say, he's not very intellectually or emotionally developed, and he's quite dense, to put it bluntly. Yeah. Bless him.
He's one of those ones, guys, who are like, it's a good thing you're pretty, because God, you're stupid.
Yeah. But yeah, he leaves Rocket mortally wounded, and they try and get a medipack on him, but they realise there's some sort of it won't work without some sort of passcode or something. So
yeah.
they're pretty much in a race against time to save Rocket's life.
Yeah, they say they've only got like 48 hours, because they try to use it as a like device inside him, put there when he was experimented on by the high evolution, and obviously then try to tamper it, it's only going to make things worse without the passcode. So, and I do it's like a 2.5 hour film, but it never feels like it drags. At least it says 2.5 hours on Disney Plus when I went to watch it, but it never feels like it drags at any point, because you get the stuff of Dan Walk fairly early on. As soon as they realise how little time they have, like, Peter is just immediately like, right, fine, everybody on the ship, come on, let's go save our friend. And Drax's like, yes, well, kill everyone. No. Kill a couple of people? No. Kill one guy. I mean, he's always been one of my favourites, but once again, Drax is a big highlight of this film for me.
Oh yeah, the way he takes things so literally, it's just brilliant comic relief, and Batista plays it so well. I don't think there's even an argument when they say which wrestler's the best actor out of John Cena, The Rock, and Dave Batista. It's easily Dave Batista, easily.
Yeah, because while The Rock and Cena get like some of the most high profile roles in terms of, you know, portraying actual characters, not being like that guy, but in this film, because no matter how many films he does it, when you watch like The Rock in one of the Fast and Furious films, like, that's not Luke Hobbs, that's The Rock in a Fast and Furious film. Whereas you see this, you don't think that's Dave Bautista, you think that's Drax there, because not only is he got the prosthetic, yeah, but he becomes the character.
Yeah, exactly. And to prove that point, I mean, you only have to see his cameo in Blade Runner 2040, is it? I forget the full title, but...
Is it like 2047 or 2049 or something?
Yeah,
like that.
The Blade Runner sequel, anyway, he's got a small cameo on that, and he plays a really good part in it for his small bit of screen time.
So, also, like, I like kind of the interplay between all of them, because Mantis was introduced in the last film, and she's become kind of a core member of the group. It doesn't really, she doesn't feel too out of place, which is good. And then, as they tease in the trailer, when they joke about the person that Peter describes when he talks about past Gamora sounds more like Nebula, there is a lot more, without the romantic element, but there's a lot more back and forth between Nebula and Quill that seems a lot reminiscent of how Ian Gilmore used to interact in the first film.
Yeah, I quite like the sort of interactions. And Nebula's become a sort of important part of the group now as well, despite starting off as more of a villain.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. And also, because then we'll see the interactions with her in past Gilmore, obviously, we know Nebula's a different person, but you know, this Gamora hasn't seen that development, so she just sees her as the same Nebula that she was when she was a villain back in, like, when the time the first Guardians came out.
Yeah, 100%. And again, talking about acting, I often forget that's Karen Gillan under all that blue makeup as well.
Yeah, no. I think for the first one she had to shave it, but I think as time goes on, they managed to get like a cat that manages to cover up her actual hair, so she doesn't have to shave it for every, which is good because like she's been in every film that the Guardians have featured, and she's also been in, so that's like seven for her. Seven times of having to shave her head would probably for any actor for a certain period of time, like I'm getting sick of this.
Well, it probably doesn't do they're any good for other roles as well, because having a long mane of red hair is probably a good, you know, a big selling point for certain characters. So not having to wait for your hair to grow back before perhaps exploring certain roles could be a right pain in the ass, I would imagine.
Yeah, definitely. Plus, I keep forgetting that she's when she's doing this role that she's actually Scottish, because she's getting a lot more roles where she has to like put on an American accent. Even when she does interviews, she started perfecting what I call the Drew McIntyre accent, you know, that very Americanized Scottish accent so the Americans can understand you.
So they decide they're going to meet somebody to help them with what they need to save Rocket with. And unfortunately for Peter Quill, that someone is Gamora, who still doesn't remember being in love with him. And this is a bit of a obsession with Peter Quill that carries us through a good portion of the movies. He's trying to jog a memory, perhaps, and feeling a bit sorry for himself at the same time. And we also get another cameo from Sylvester Stallone.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's kind of the leader of the Ravagers. With a little voice cameo in there from Tara Strong, voice of Miss Minutes, is that weird talking helmet thing they've got.
Yes, yeah, I saw her in the credits.
Because I'm pretty sure, because you had him and his old Ravager pals, like, so they're still in one of the post-credit scenes for Guardians 2, and apparently the voice for that brief scene when that character had, like, one line, you got Miley Cyrus in to record one line, and it's like, oh, you've got two lines in this one. No, Miley's not available. Okay, Dad, I know you've wrapped up your recording for Miss Minutes. Do you mind reading a few of these lines?
I bet she's a bit cheaper than trying to get Miley Cyrus in as well for couple of lines.
Because we were getting these fucking singers in to do random bits like her, and then you got that one post-credit scene from Eternals with Harry Styles in it. So it's popping up all over the place. But yeah, I'd forgotten that Sylvester Stallone was in the last one before he popped up here. He's all these like old Ravager like pals, and you know Peter's still trying to talk to her, but to Gamora, as you said, but she's kind of paying him no attention. Her and Neo just appear to each other, just going, huh, at each other. And I do love a little insight here, because it's kind of a little refresher for people who haven't maybe watched since Endgame, don't know what's happening with the Guardians kind of line up, but that scene where he explains to that woman in the elevator why he and Gamora aren't getting along and everything. It also gives us an insight into the fact that not everybody, you know, we as an audience know why certain people came back after the blip and some people didn't, because they weren't snapped out. But not everyone in the MCU canon really knows it, because you've got that line from Quill where he goes, if he didn't come back, I don't know why I'm not some sort of Infinity Stone scientist.
Yeah, and there's another bit when they're explaining the plan and they talk about the boiler suits they have to wear, and Drax is like, well, does it have to be red? I don't like red. It clashes with my eyes. And he said it's so deadpan, it's so funny.
I know, everyone laughs, and then you got that character give like a, it was like some sort of sea creature with one of Doctor Strange's rings. It doesn't speak, but it forms like a laughing face emoji in the air, so I can laugh along with everybody else. Oh, it's just funny, you got all these like multicolored suits, and then you got a song by Rainbow playing as they pull about in them.
Well, I didn't even think about that at the time. Well, well spotted, Scott.
I mean, this is James Gunn. I'm trying to get inside the mind of James Gunn here, you know.
That's funny. He's trying to talk to Gamora again about the sort of not being in a love situation. And he presses the blue button on his suit, which you would logically think would talk to the blue suit. And Matt's like, we can all hear you. but I pressed the blue button on the suit. No, the blue is for everyone. And I can't remember the exact colour combinations, but it's like, green is for red is for yellow, and stuff like that. Well, it's intuitive, and he's like, how am I meant to know?
That seems pretty intuitive. And then Greg's and Mantis are arguing, like, no, red is for green, yellow is for orange, or I'm like, that's not true, try it. And she's just like, oh, and it goes right to the quill. So he's like, why didn't anyone tell me you could all hear me? And Nebula goes, we're hoping it would stop on its own. I think about this film, I don't know what it is. I think this and Thor Love and Thunder were trying to do similar things in that, you know, trying to have that mix of emotional moments and quite a bit of comedy, and you know, having these characters crack jokes, you know, undercut the tension by cracking like jokes. But I don't know, I think there's just some way that James Gunn was able to do it that, you know, Taika Waititi made work in Thor Ragnarok, but you see how everyone reacted to Love and Thunder just didn't make it work all the same. I don't know what it is that, I just don't know why it worked for this film but didn't work for Love and Thunder.
I think he just went a bit overboard on it, perhaps, Love and Thunder, but yeah, it does sort of work. But maybe it's something to do with the chemistry of the cast on Guardians as well, perhaps.
Yeah, probably. Because also, I think, you know, Thor was trying to create jokes, but there were times where he, from with that film, was kind of made it to be an idiot when we know he isn't. Whereas all these characters, while they get called stupid, like Drax and Mantis keep getting called stupid by Nebula, like they all bring something, so we know that they're not all just complete idiots.
And they are naturally funny characters, Guardians of the Galaxy. They've been written like that from day one. Before, sometimes it does feel a bit forced here and there as well.
Plus, it probably helped that also this is James Gunn, you know, finalising a vision he probably had all along, whereas Taika Waititi probably came into Ragnarok and probably didn't know if he was going to come back for another one.
Needed Loki. That was what it. That's what it was.
yes, it did. But talking about how them not being queers, they managed to get into that, you know, facility because it's the same company that made that device inside rockets. So they. No, I think that'll lead them to the people who can help them. But they while trying to hide their suits and what they think is a bin, it's actually a chute that shoots them out into space.
Mantis gets the blame for that, poor devil.
I know, and I do love that you know, James Gunn's the kind of guy, you work with him once, you'll probably have a job, a regular gig, because we get a Nathan Fillion cameo again in this one. And we know he's going to be part of his upcoming Superman film. And, you know, when Drax says something stupid in front of them, Quill goes, I forget, you know, he's the boss's son, you know, or whatever, his nephew. And then Nathan Fillion looks at one of his own guys and goes, oh, I got one of them.
Yeah, he's always so good, Nathan Fillion. He's got such good comedic time and he's such a good actor. I love most of the things he ends up being in, to be fair.
Yeah. Quick thing about, there was a scene I think that came before this that we didn't really talk about, but yeah, when we're first introduced to the High Evolutionary, when he's given out to Adam Warlock and, you know, his mother, the woman High Priestess of the Sovereign, who we met in the second film, the kind of gold people. So we learn here that High Evolutionary created them in this scene, and also the Guardians learn it later on. So, and then, you know, she's, he gets kind of introduction to him, and he just wipes Adam Warlock aside and everything. And he basically, he's angry at them, like, so you had dealings with the Guardians, you knew that Rocket was alive all this time, and you didn't tell me. And, you know, first getting introduced to him as quite an intimidating character.
Yeah, he's, how can you put it? He's just not a very nice piece of work. And he seems quite powerful as well, but I don't know if that's really played through right until the end of the film, which we'll get to when we get there. But yeah, he's got this weird looking face, which is also explained later on, where it looks like it's stretched over him somehow. And yeah, he's got this obsession with creating like the perfect society, and we sort of start to see flashbacks of how he sort of created Rocket Raccoon and other sorts of strange animals. Like there's I'm quite arachnophobic, and that rabbit thing with the spider like legs, that was freaking me out, man. It really was.
Yes. I really liked how I think the Guardians films, they've had kind of okay villains. I think the Kurt Russell ego villain they had in the last one is kind of bit looks better on a rewatch, but this is by far the best villain of the Guardians.
Definitely, like, yeah.
And one of the better, I think, MCU villains overall. Like I said to you and Reese before, like when we talked about doing a roundback of MCU villains, I said, like, we need to wait till Carl's seen Guardians 3, because personally, I would probably put High Evolution very high up there. And I think part of the reason we don't see him is, but I was thinking about today as well. I'm wondering, he's got all these people who work for him, like these things that he's created, all these people who work beneath him, and I assume that because he thinks of himself as above everyone else, he just thinks, like, I've got this power, but I don't need to use it. I'll have everyone else do my dirty work for me.
Pretty much, yeah. He does sort of see himself as pretty much above everybody. In one part of the film, he sort of misses, but, well, he says, there is no God. That's why I stepped in. That's sort of, that's how arrogant he is.
I wanted to give a few more examples again of, you know, James Gunn. You work with him once, you'll work with him again. I cannot remember the name of the actor. His name is very hard to pronounce. But the actor who plays the High Evolutionary was in Peacemaker. Can't remember the name of his character in that, but he was the one kind of leader of that little squad they had, who was actually revealed to be one of the aliens in it.
Ah,
right. For those who've seen Peacemaker. But also, I can't remember the name of the actress who voices the weird spider character, Floor. She calls herself, because why?
Yeah.
I'm lying on the floor. Yeah, but the other two, Tiefs was voiced by Assam Chowdhury, UK comedian and writer. You think that does that show People Do Nothing or whatever it's called? And Lila, the kind of otter character that Rocket's close to, was voiced by Linda Cardellini, who we've seen in the MCU before as Hawkeye's wife. But also,
I knew, I saw she was in it, and I couldn't figure out who she was. But now you've explained it to me.
Because immediately I recognised some of the voices, in it, and I, like, as soon as the credits were coming, while I was waiting for the post credit, I was in the cinema, I was on my phone, like, right, who was that? thing. But it's also funny, again, she worked with James Gunn as well, because when James Gunn's first proper gig, I think he at least wrote it. I don't know if he was directed or not, but when James Gunn's first proper big gigs was the live-action Scooby-Doo films from the early 2000s.
Oh, right.
And she was obviously in that as Thelma.
Which, ironically, Thelma, is she?
Yeah.
Why did I never realise that? Probably because I've never watched the Scooby-Doo films, but that's beside the point.
They are very 2000s, I'll just say that. But in terms of casting, they get it pretty spot on for the four human ones. But also, I thought it was quite funny. It's quite similar. No, not to get too far ahead of ourselves, but when we look at the ending, when we see the villain wearing a mask to reveal what he truly looked like, you're like, and that's very Scooby-Doo, that is.
It is, yes. All he needed to do was say, I would have got away with it too if it wasn't for you pesky kids.
When I talked about the High Evolutionary, I talked about seeing people was beneath him, because he never calls Rocket by his name or anything. He just, every time he mentions him, even when he's talking to one of the Guardians or even to Rocket himself, he calls him by the number that he assigned him. Like, he calls all of them by a certain number.
Yeah, it's probably because he doesn't want to feel it. Well, he doesn't feel any sort of emotional connection to them. They're just experiments and and things to him. And we sort of see that Rocket and these other animals, and like we've seen the flashbacks, the only things he's experimented on. He sort of built this machine that can expedite something's evolutionary time period for, you know, like 2,000 years in a couple of seconds, but it's only sort of physically, they still remain quite savage and uncontrollable, and he can't work out why. And Rocket sort of points something out, and the exposition is a bit too scientific and whatnot for me to remember exactly what he says. And the high evolutionary is quite taken aback by that he couldn't figure it out, but there's this little creation spotting it almost straight away. It kind of impresses him and pisses him off all at the same time.
Yeah, like something to do with the filtration of the pods he's using, producing that protein, which caused him to act too angry. And later on, he's yelling, I'm like, yes, but how did you know? Like, I made you, so like, basically, and has made everything you know, I should know. So, and he decides he's going to, this whole thing of wanting to get Rocket is he wants to experiment on his brain and use how Rocket's brain developed to help further perfect what he's building. And kind of coldness when Rocket realizes that the group that he's in with, they were never meant to be a part of his world, they were meant to be experiments so he could further build on that for the people who would actually go to his counter earth. And he's going like, oh, you can figure out these complex problems, but you couldn't figure out that.
Yeah, it is bizarre how sort of Rocket's brain works, bless. And we sort of go back to everybody in the that weird sort of facility, which is like it's a bit like you're inside, isn't it? The way it's all set up, and it's quite strange, all looking like organs and blood cells and stuff. And to get past some sort of security thing, Mantis puts a hand on this guy who's, you're madly in love with Drax. And apparently it's something she does a lot, because he's Drax says, every time.
Because like earlier on, they had she was an item from earlier on, because they're trying to figure, worked on something on the ship to help get through the shields of this facility, and then she's angry. She yells at Drax randomly at the end, and like, and maybe I wanted a Zark nut because he offers one to Quill, just starts eating his packet of nuts. He goes like, sorry, there's none left. And then as he slowly but sure just puts one in his mouth, she's annoyed for that, because she talks about like, why did you never go back to Earth and everything? Like, you've got your grandfather there and everything. Like, he's probably dead, you know. You know, human beings only live till they're 50. Like, really? Are you going to die soon? I'm not 50. And then I do love that this guy, he looks at Drax when he's under Matt's thing, goes, what's your name? Drax the Destroyer. That's a pretty name.
Yeah.
And I think it's in this bit where we get the bit I said earlier where Quill does the kind of up to speed on, you know, where on what's happened between him and Gamora. Like, this isn't her Gamora, she fell off a cliff or whatever. And there's a bit where he tries to like talk to the, try and get, you know, sweet talk this woman to try and get a file, and he goes down and introduces himself as Patrick Swayze, but then Gamora's like, oh, she was never going to fall for this, and just pulls a gun on her.
But yeah, it does eventually kick off when they realise they're intruders, and Nathan Fillion and his sort of, what are they supposed to be dressed as? Quite make me mind. I was going to feel like little slugs, or meant to be like red blood cells or something. But yeah, they start firing on everyone. They shoot Drax a couple of times, which had me panicking, thinking they'd actually killed him off halfway through the film. And then Peter Quill starts sweet talking that computer woman again, and Gamora's like running around going, she's talking to her is not going to help. They will if they listen to me from the heart. And then when she logs him in, there's now talk to us. Oh, I'm not going to talk to them. That's not going to work. I was just saying that to get you to log me in. And he turns, obviously does some of the gravity, and they all start floating away, all the villains.
He's like, yeah, not actually that stupid. And then he's like, oh, because earlier on he was like, oh, I'll talk to her and I'll use a bit of the old Quill term and tell you, she's into me. And then later on when he actually manages to get in after talking to her, like, see, I told you she was enemy. Yeah, and then Groot comes smashing her. Who is people at the internet have decided to call him Swole Groot because he's, you know, been growing obviously since he got blown up a couple of films ago. And he comes in his version of I Am Groot when he comes in with the ship, which apparently is referred to as the Bowie in this. Obviously a reference to the David Bowie. And he goes, basically, you can tell from context when the way that Nebula responds to, like, yes, that did seem cool.
And yeah, they've obviously found out what they need to know, which is a planet they need to go to find what's his flipping name again?
The High Evolutionary.
High Evolutionary, that's it. And when they land on it, it's like a planet just like Earth, but like proper suburbs and that, but everybody's like been evolved from like different sort of animals and things by the locks.
Because there's a bit of a sad moment where like they get a file on Rocket and they watch it and you just hear him screaming as you can hear the scientists that were like saying, "What, hold still?" And so they're all like off shot because Rocket never talks about what happened to him. But the one reference we got to, like the first one, we start he's arguing with Drax and he goes like, "Oh, I didn't ask to be pulled apart and put back together again." All and so the way so they're figuring out like why Rocket probably is the way he is because of how he's been treated, and that just motivates them more. But then I was just trying to say, like, you can't go and face the High Evolution. It's clearly a trap. It's not a trap if you know it's a trap. It's a face-off.
Yeah, and yeah, and you do sort of think they have walked into a trap, but fair play when we get to that bit. He did have a plan.
There's
not a very really good one, but a plan.
Yeah. When they do land, there's a point that's in the trailer that I still laughed at it. Both when I've seen it in cinemas, I'm going to watch it back when the people are kind of taken aback by them, but that little girl throws the ball to Drax, who then just launches it back at her. And then everyone just starts kicking off. And I do love the way that the signal that Nebula gives to Groot, which is full kaiju. Which is very funny.
But yeah, it's quite funny when they sort of land on this planet and all these people sort of, well, I say people, the inhabitants sort of gather around and it all starts getting a bit silly and Peter Quill has to sort of calm everybody down. And I don't know what they're supposed to be, but that one family does sort of let them into the house and everything, don't they?
Yeah, I think there may be bats, is what I can
say. Well, that's probably about right, yeah.
Like when she spoke or when the husband spoke, I had the subtitles on Disney Plus, and the Disney Plus subtitles said next to her thing, vampire bat wife, and then vampire bat husband. Like, do you really need the vampire part, or just larger, more evolved bats? Really, and whenever they spoke or those children, the ship spoke. I think it said in the subtitles they speak Orbeez or something like that, Orbesh or something like that. Which is clearly the language that's been developed by the High Evolutionary for these creatures.
But yeah, and they sort of trying to find out where they want to go, and they realize it's like this like big pyramid thing sort of in the distance. And it's like, do you have a car? and they fearlessly let him jump into a car where neither him or any of the others really know how to drive. When I was last on there, I know more about driving than you do.
But then Nebula can't even figure out how to open the door. Like, the button, what button? No, that's a keyhole. Like, okay, push the button, now what? That opened the fucking door.
Yeah, you said an F word, Jesus. But I think it was well deserved, that level of frustration. It would bring an F word, I think.
Yeah, I think they were talking a lot about this going into it, because I think it said that these Marvel MCU films are like PG-13 in America, which you can get away with like one F-bomb. But in the past, they've not really done it, or they tease people like swearing or anything, like, because like Samuel Jackson gets like dusted in the end of Infinity War midway through saying motherfucker and everything. So, because like, so you can see other words, because I think man just called someone a dickhead later on. But like, we thought, oh, let's take advice, let's go. I said the first uncensored F-bomb in the MCU. And of course they have Chris Pratt do it. And then, yeah, like he skids out immediately, hits a trash guy because he's like, he was 8 years old when he left Earth. He didn't know how to drive. He can pilot shit like nobody.
Yeah.
He pilots shit like nobody's business, but you know, he just knows how to operate a car.
Well, he gets the hang of it well enough to make it to their destination. Now, and he tells Drax and Mantis to wait with the ship. And of course, we all know that's not going to go well.
Yeah. Like, go on, we'll get on the... Because the guy drives by, the Drax just sticks his arm out. And I'll be honest with you, every so often someone rides by on the bike and I'm just tempted to do that. Or just shout boo and see if they fall off. But yeah, but Drax with a clothesline to the guy off the bike, and then he goes, oh, come on, we'll ride back to the ship. He drives forward like, Drax, you jerk.
Yeah, yeah. I can't believe Mantis fell for that, to be honest. His lies aren't very convincing.
I know, because you've got... I'll use Gamora to watch Rocket because she's very unreluctant to be here, but they say like we don't have time to drop you over the rounds. There's no Rocket's life at stake here.
And now so they make it to the sort of pyramid thing, and there's like a weird looking sort of, is it like a...
There's a pig and there's
a warthog type thing. Really cool war pig, which is a well known song. So that was quite cool. Yeah, like a, was it turtle type thing, did we say?
I thought it was maybe some sort of owl because it looked very feathery.
Oh, yeah, that could be it. Yeah.
Some kind of bird. I remember seeing that first family, like, even though I know like one of them in the turtles is a rhino, but I remember looking at them, seeing one was a pig, like, look at now, where the hell did the high evolutionary create Bebop and Rocksteady? Is this pyramid secretly the Technodrome? Like, have we crossed over to the wrong film?
But yeah, and we sort of see the high evolutionary isn't still not satisfied with this world he's created with all these sort of animal type things, and he's going to sort of to wipe it clean and start again, which means mercilessly killing all the inhabitants. So he's a nasty piece of work, but he doesn't think twice about just killing everyone off and just starting again and not even giving, you know, a real chance for these societies to sort of evolve. You know, I mean, you can't just... He thinks he can just create it and the perfect society will just be there from minute one.
Yeah, because as they were driving through, they seen like there were one or two of these creatures, you know, that was homeless. There were ones being beaten up or selling drugs to others. Like, no, exactly his idea of perfect. So, yeah, he doesn't think twice by just blowing that up. And, like, you know, any other superhero movie, they'd like the planet being about to be blown up by the evolution would be like the end climaxing of trying to save all these people from being mercilessly blown. Like, no, whole planet just gets destroyed and we carry on the film, like, me knowing the family we met earlier on there. You're introduced to them, they're dead now. Like, to further maybe probably get you against the evolution. I think also, you know, they're about to walk in, that cuts to the final Rocket flashback, which is the most harrowing of all of them.
Oh yeah, it's gutting, isn't it? Well, we sort of say that we can sort of, even from Mondays, he can scavenge bits and pieces and create, you know, make things out of it. And he's been scavenging bits of metal and tech, and he's managed to make himself a sort of security card so he can break out of the prison cells.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because like, there was a battle around where they all give each other names, and he calls a rocket so he can one day fly a rocket with his friends out into the sky. And yeah, also now he's learned that they're not going to go, so he needs to get them out of there. Because they put this right before Peter's introduction with the Irish, which would further make you realise, like, yeah, this is a fucking bad guy you're dealing with here. And this is what he's done with Rocket. Because you don't know, nothing that's really addressed at this point is that he looks very different in these flashbacks to how he does here, and we realise why. Because he manages to get Lila out, and in mid-sentence, she's shot by the High Evolutionary, and in a fit of just rage, Rocket just claws his face up.
But it's okay, just sort of shakes Kelsa, and then he's like casually like, yeah, I thought you'd try something like this.
And Rocket's like screaming and crying, and he just mocks it back to him like, yes, yes, you win the crying contest, now back in the cage.
As you say, he sort of jumps up on him and totally mutilates his face.
And then he grabs his gun, tries to shoot these guards that come, but some stray shots kill his other friends, and now the Rocket has to flee on his own.
Yeah, he jumps into a ship and just about manages to get away.
And then that's when we get to the High Evolutionary meeting with Peter and everything. So that's the bit I was like, oh, Jesus, no. Because the other two are screaming like, no, Rocket, let's go, let's go. And if he just hadn't been so overcome rage, maybe he could have got them out as well. And you can tell later on that Rocket has never forgiven himself for what happened. Like, he blames himself for the three of them being dead.
It's weighed heavy on his conscience, and it just makes a lot of sense with sort of how he is and how he sort of keeps people at arm's length, so to speak, apart from perhaps Groot. We sort of see Drax and Mantis, and they sort of get into the facility, and they get surrounded by those weird sort of alien creatures, don't they?
Yeah. But I do like the High Evolutionary explaining these by like, oh, I visited your world years ago. It would be great if it wasn't for all the bigotry and everything. And Peter just cuts them off like, I don't need another melodramatic speech for some psycho who wants to take over the universe. He's like, no, that's not what I'm doing. I'm perfecting the universe. And when they grab one of his scientists because they realize he can help them, and they dive out after Groot's like got all these limbs he shouldn't at people, but he dives it, and everybody goes, an extraordinary escape strategy, diving headfirst into an exploding planet.
And the things are, well, you're gonna kill us both. Like, not both.
What's funny is that when Mantis, I'm pretty sure we round up when I watched it back, but when Mantis, Nebula, and Drax are on the side road breaking, like, we need to save Groot and Quill, just to the bottom right corner at one point, you just see Groot and that dropping down with that guy, just like obliviously, like going past each other.
And he sort of makes sort of wings out of his arms and catches them.
Yeah. So I thought they were just going to tease, like I thought when we watched it, they were just going to get off them, like while they're falling, and then drop him. No, they just Groot gently carries down fucking Quill, but the man that just crashed, slammed this guy down on the ground. Yeah. and then just tear this thing off his head. Quite cold-blooded when you think of it, but I think when they know what these people did to Rocket, I don't think they really care.
No, quite right. Not just Rocket, others as well. We see Mantis sort of, don't, you're scaring them. They're scared of what we're going to do to them. And she manages to use her sort of powers to calm these sort of creatures down. And they sort of end up riding them at one point as well, like, which is really cool.
Yeah, I think it was like the same creatures that we saw like at the start of the last one. They were trying to save. They were working for the Sovereign, which, speaking of it, when the planet starts blowing up, Adam Warlock races to his mother's ship to save her, but literally he reaches out and fucking the ship blows up, and he ends up, him and this little furry creature he seemingly adopted as a...
Yeah.
I do also the scene where he's sitting on it, and his mother's like, this undignified of that creature. I will train it in the ways of the Sovereign. And it's up looking at itself, I will train it not to do that.
Yeah, because it's a bit like they want him to kill the creature or something. It's like, oh, I don't want to. I don't like the way it's making me feel.
Yeah, because like he killed the guy that originally wanted to, like, show him we mean business, and he just kind of disintegrates the guy. He's like, that's not what I meant. Showing we mean business doesn't mean disintegrate him. Like, what for the business could it serve?
Yeah. Forgot about that, but that is hilarious. Yeah.
A lot of people come out of this were saying that Adam Warlock and by extension Will Porter who plays him, because I think they made a big deal about his casting, but they thought he was a bit wasted in this film. But more than I think about it, like, he makes the most of the moments he is in. I think judging by the end of the film, he's going to be back in like different projects. So plus I don't think, you know, this was a easy introduction, but the story really wasn't about him anyway.
No, I mean, I thought originally he was going to be sort of the main villain of the the third film, but obviously that wasn't the case. And bit of cool on the others, they managed to get the passcode they need, and they are able to use the medipack to heal Rocket, and Rocket is back, and all is well, sort of well.
Yeah, I mean, They did trick you in, because like all this emphasis, like you said, oh, we'll learn about his backstory, all the stuff with the flashbacks while he's under, you know, kind of like his life flashing before his eyes. Even that scene where he meets them again on the other side and he's crying, and again, that nearly got me as well. I think, like, is this going to be the death that was teased going into it? Because his heart starts beating and Quill's trying to give him, try to resuscitate him, like, I won't let him go.
Yeah, they're trying to stop him, saying, you know, telling him he's gone, and he's doing like the chest compressions, saying, No, I'm not going to lose him. I'm not going to let him go. And he does come back, thankfully.
I think part of it was because Pasky wasn't taken at first, and then it does go through because he wants to go on, you know, to the Adelaide with Lila and everything. She was like, but not yet. It's like, you've still got, you know, a purpose here. It's almost like with James Gunn speaking through this character said, "My dear raccoon, it was always your story. You just didn't know it yet." And I do love it when he gets pulled back in. I'm not a rat. He gets pulled back in. Yeah, and I do love. It's kind of a sweet moment because it's kind of a little bit of like insight into the fact that Nebula and Rock have a little bit of a friendship. You've seen it as well in the holiday special, but at least she kind of pauses for a thing when she hears Rocket's voice on the comms. It's kind of relief that.
Mm.
That he's alive.
May I also get a little bit of almost like a subplot bit with the Cosmo the dog being got a bad dog, and I'm not liking it. No, tell me I'm a good dog.
Because she makes fun of Kragan because he's got Yondu's like Finn, and he can't quite make it work the same way. She kind of shows him what using her telekinesis and. Like, that's not true. He called me a bad dog. And later on, like, a bunch of people from nowhere, he got her Howard the Ducks there again. And like these Soviets, they sent me out knowing I'd never come back from space. I'd die in a fiery ball. But even they, not even them, would call me a bad dog. And everyone's like, oh, Craiglin, just take it back. This is excruciating.
Oh, how could I take it back when she is a bad...
Yeah. Something I keep finding out, like I remember hearing it ages ago, but I keep remembering it. Guy I do plays Kraglin, Sean Gunn, is also the actor who does the physical stuff for Rocket. So even though he's not in as much as Kraglin, he is in the film, like, do a lot of Rocket's bits.
Oh, right. I didn't realise that.
Yeah, I found out about it. I think he also was in the Suicide Squad film they did where he played like a weasel for a brief minute. Just go. Basically, when you watch some of the scenes, the behind the scenes stuff of his bits, but without the CGI, because like there was a screenshot of a side by side the bit where all four of the Rock and the other three are lying on their cage, and then it's the actors in the suit. Since the actual actors for the other three, and it's Sean Gunn filling in for. Bradley Cooper, but Bradley Cooper did talk more about this film and the aftermath of it than any of the others, because he admitted when he got the script for Guardians 3 he started to cry a little bit.
You can't help it. That's probably why it's probably been the best Marvel film in this phase. Is this phase 4 or 5?
No, 5. I think 4 ended after Wakanda Forever, so we're still fairly early on in Phase 5. But yeah, I mean, I could list on one hand the good films from Phase 4, so I still understand what you mean about it being of the better films like so far. I think it's still number three at the minute. It's number three in terms of grossing films so far this year. Like the only two that beaten it are Barbie's number one, which is still going strong. I think just above this is Mario Brothers. So of the top three, Chris Pratt's got two of the top grossing films this year.
He's doing all right for himself. As I say, he's got a proper emotional anchor to, you know, as that threads through the movie with the whole, you know, whole Rocket Raccoon situation. And as a character, you know, as a character that everyone seems to like and care about, viewers and in movie characters alike. So it really works to, you know, keep you invested in the film. On the plot.
So, and now we have to do another rescue because now they need to get Mantis, yeah. Mantis tracks and everybody off the ship. And Rocket's, you know, a bit, you know, trepidatious about it, but, you know, he's ready to go back in and save them. And you've got the bit where they're talking to the kids, and it turns out Drax can, like, speak their language. And Mantis like, Nebula's like, how did you not tell us you speak their language? You didn't ask.
Yeah, like all these like blonde sort of children that must be his next experiment and thing for his next society, perhaps. So there's like loads of them, isn't there? And yeah, they decide he's got to rescue all them and all the other sort of creatures he's experimented on, even this weird looking thing that they come across.
Yeah, apparently there was an alternative version of that scene where Mantis reacts the same, but she opens the cage and it's James Gunn in the cage. Which would have been funny. But yeah, because like there's a bit where like one of these kids is running on this wheel and however she's looking over her, he's like, so he's been doing this for 2 hours and like he's listing all these things that he can do and how evolved they are, but he said he still needs, you know, 81P13 or something like that. Or I think is what he calls him. And he said, like, because, you know, his ability to think, you know, independently, you know, and learn things, and, you know, just stuff that's programmed and that stuff they need because the society that can't think on it, so it is doomed. So he can't, he said, like, you know, his assistant say, oh, should go into this new colony now, not engage these guards. Like, no, we need to get him first before we can move on, otherwise we can't develop this perfect, you know, society.
Yeah, and even though everything's sort of falling down around him and his sort of second in command, I take it, that woman is, he's like, no, all that matters is getting P162 or whatever his designated number is. And she's sort of like, right, I'm taking command of the ship, and her and all the other sort of minions sort of threaten to turn on him, but he sort of overpowers them with his abilities. But it just shows you that even they were getting sick of the High Evolutionary and his like obsession with creating this perfect society.
He's like, he's creating these things, he's called the Hellspawn. Like they're strictly for pretending this to everybody's like, no, unleash all of them just to take out the guards and get back Rocket. Like when they get on the ship, he's like, he puts out a message saying, like, you know, bring me 81B23 or whatever it is, like, and kill the others. And then he starts yelling, like, tell me a fire and kill everyone inside nowhere because Kraglin's managed to pilot it and blow a hole in the side of his ship. And that's when we get the resolution to the whole Cosmo bad dog, good dog story.
Yes.
Because you know, Yondu appears before Kraglin, like Obi-Wan Kenobi and Empire Strikes Back, and helps them get the hang of like using the arrow.
Yeah. Oh, there is a funny bit when he tries to use that on, and near the beginning he tries to use that on Adam Warlock, and it just pings off him, and he's like, what was that?
Yeah, who threw that? Who threw this at me? Cosmo manages to save him from that beat thing by using her tailgates to like squash him between two to, like massive bits of concrete. And so, yes, I know, you know, you thought I was a good dog. And then it looks like they're gonna like leave when they've got everybody, but like, no, we need to save everyone on board. And we had bloody Intergalactic during the Marvels trailer, then we get another Beastie Boys song during this big.
Yeah, I'm obsessed with the Beastie Boys at the moment, which is No Bad Thing.
And then so they got a like long one shot, seemingly one shot hallway fight scene. Everybody jumping off, killing all these things. Even that little furry thing that they've got with them, the armor, like I gets a chance to get involved. And according to James Gunn, like that scene was the last time that all of the main cast were on set at the same time.
Oh, right.
So, seemingly kind of an emotional, kind of emotional moment that day when they were filming it.
Yeah, I can imagine it was. And they finally defeat the High Evolutionary, and it's sort of like mask comes off, and his face is it's not a pretty sight.
No, he like, his nose is off and everything. Look, his drag's like his face came off, and Rocket before that he sees a thing of like little baby raccoons, and then reads because he realizes it looks like him. It says raccoon, and so he's like, huh, maybe I'm a raccoon, and. Ellie was sure he's yelled at me, thrown him around, but Rocket, it mentions he had a gravity boot, so he manages to use those. He goes, my name's Rocket, Rocket Raccoon, and just blows him away, and then the Guardians help take him down, and you know, he said, I don't want to be like him, I'm a Guardian, that's why he doesn't kill him. And I think, I don't know if it was confirmed that he didn't die or whatever, but he just kind of like the Batman Begins myth, like, I'm not going to kill you, but I don't have to save you either.
Pretty much, yeah. And he would have thought there'd be someone who'd do more heinous things to raccoons than Liam Hall.
Yeah. I mean, this performance from the High actor playing High Evolutionary, like, I remember when all the Jonathan Majors thing came out, even though we had that scene with all the different gangs that looked like him at the end of Quantumania, so many people were campaigning, like, listen, he wears purple. Why can't we say that High Evolutionary is a Kang variant and just... You know, there's a way to maneuver. Just bring this guy back. Let him, like, while also probably simultaneously saying, let's just hope this actor doesn't get into trouble as well.
Yeah, that could have probably worked. I could see him sort of playing Kang variants. He's certainly got the acting chops for that, without a doubt.
Although maybe they were wanting to see how the Majors kind of court case panned out. But also, I don't know if James Gunn would have liked that being kind of retconned to, like, I wish he'd been in one of the Kang variants, because he was very adamant when promoting the film, like, this is not tying into whatever is going on with the multiverse and everything. This is just a wrap-up of our story, and if they reworked it to say that he was a Kang variant, that would basically be against that. So, mind you, I don't think Marvel would care how James Gunn would feel about that, because he was on his way out the door anyway.
No, that's true. He was got his big poster DC. And
He'd already packed up his desk, you know, stolen some stationery, and he put it in his box.
But we also get, like, the Guardians sort of go in their separate ways, don't we? Mantis goes off of her little her big little creatures. Peter Quill goes back to Earth to see his granddad. And... So we get like Rocket and a few others stay together, don't they? One of those blonde girls is part of the new team, and Adam Warlock.
Yeah, we did get a tease that maybe Peter Quill was going to die because he went back for his suit, and I think, and then Adam Warlock saves him.
Yes,
and then as they revealed that he went back to get it for Rocket, because Rocket was using it a couple of times. You hear Rocket singing along to the song, because like, you see him in the second one where he's wiring up the songs to play when they're waiting for the creature to show. He goes like, oh, I'm listening to tunes. It's Quill's idea. He's the one obsessed with music. Now Rocket's into it as well. So now in the new teams, like Kim, Kraglin, Groot, that little girl, Adam Warlock, and Cosmo. And like Drax sticks around to take care of the children, because Nebula says to him, like, you weren't born to be a destroyer, you were born to be a father. Because, you know, his old quest in the first one was getting to Ronan because of what he did to his daughter. Mm.
Yeah, exactly. Because I'd heard Drax had been killed after. I was quite I was quite confused that he was still alive at the end of the film. So, but yeah, whether I got something confused or I misheard, I don't know.
It's weird because everyone, there was all the talk there was going to be a major death in Guardians, and it never really panned out. Maybe they changed their mind or whatever, but.
Or as a red herring to make us, you know, when someone was near death, like Peter Quill or Drax, when he got shot a couple of times, to make you think, yeah, oh, you know, this is it. They're actually gonna die here. So it's quite a, if it was a mystery, it's quite a clever one because it made you actually believe a character might be dying. Because usually you know they're gonna survive, don't you? But.
I think we got confirmation that Star-Lord will appear again some other way. But
yeah.
Whereas Batista has said that he's not doing it anymore. So I think, which I think is why I think everyone saw him as the favourite to get killed off. Mm. Because if he wasn't going to do it anymore, then I've explained why, you know, have him killed off. But I'm unclear as to where everyone else is going to go. I mean, Groot and Rocket will probably be back then, given how this film ends. But the biggest surprise, I think, is going through it, Gamora, because this version has been around Groot, like you all can understand him, like, goes, I am Groot, you've said that already. But then she understands him at the end, and then there's a scene where they're all standing around, and Groot goes, I love you guys.
Yeah, that caught me by surprise. I had to rewind that back, thinking, was that Groot saying that?
But I think the idea is, like, the longer you're around Groot, the more you understand him, so the idea is, like, we've been along with Groot for all these films and these other ones he's appeared in, so finally we as the audience understand Groot for this one moment. Which it probably was a shock to the system of Vin Diesel when he went to the script, like, look, this is wrong. I don't say I am Groot on this page. Is this a mistake? Is this my life? Yeah, like you said, Peter goes back to Earth. I have to question the decision behind these post-credit scenes, by the way.
No, I know. Some of them are just pointless, aren't they?
I mean, they always have, they have two post-credits nowadays. It seems to be the shitter one they leave right at the end, when really, you want to say the better one for the right end, so make people feel like it's worth going back for, because the first post-credits scene is, at least this, I think it's the post-credits scene, I don't know if it's the actual ending, but you have Rocket and everyone all talking about songs, really, and then Rocket plays one, and it's Come and Get Your Love from the first film. And Kraglin laughs, because I'm assuming when he was with the Yondu's group, Peter probably played that song a lot. And then they all get ready to fight, and then it cuts away. And then the actual post-credit scene at the very end is Peter having cereal with his granddad. And then it comes up, Star-Lord will return, like, I don't know if I want to, if it's going to be more of this.
Also, I've talked about banging songs. I like when the emotional bit, sort of at the end, they play Florence and the Machine, Dog Days Are Over, and I thought that worked really well for those sort of closing scenes near the end.
Yeah, I mean, there were some really, like, great artists to this. Like we said, we had Florence and the Machines, you had Beast Boy, you had bloody Faith No More playing the song when they landed on that. The planet had Rainbow playing when they landed on that facility later on. So again, knocking out the park with the soundtrack, and
really do,
Can't wait for this new Superman film just to be filled with bloody 80s tracks, because you know he's got a pattern now. Does James Gunn?
It's like Seamus. It's banger after banger after banger.
Absolutely. I think that's everything there. I think we've pretty much summed up the majority of pretty much everything we're talking about.
Yeah, definitely. And I can see on why you and Reese were rating it so highly when you were talking about it on one of our group chats. So now I have watched it, Reese, and I still think it's crap.
It was annoying because, like, I remember we did the MCU ranking just after the Quantumania came out. So me and Reese kind of had to kind of say why it was kind of low down and not quite highly without spoiling it for you. But I really wish this could have been out when we did that ranking.
Well, there's always going to be something in the pipeline, isn't it? So yeah. Yeah, but unfortunately, when you do these, there's always going to be something that you wish you could have done. But what can you do? So if you were going to rate this out of 10, what would you rate this film, Scott?
You know what? I'm going to give it a 10.
I've got a sneeze coming. Sorry. Can I hold it off so I'm not sneezing in the air? I'd say 9.5. It's not quite a 10 out of 10 for me, but I do think it's really good. I did really enjoy it, but not for me, not quite 10 out of 10, but not far off.
Yeah. I was going to go 9.5, but I couldn't really think of anything that would take the half point off four. And I was having a weird random discussion like midway through. I was with my friends, so I was a Brothers were watching SummerSlam the other week, and just in the middle of it, I can't remember which match it was. It was just a big discussion about the MCU just broke out, and I made the case that I think the Guardians, of all the characters have got like a trilogy or more of like films like on their own, I think the Guardians have the best, like without a doubt. My friend Alan is always insisting that it's Captain America. When no, Captain America. Like 2 and 3 are good, and like as much as I like the first one, I admit the other two sequels are better. But a big reason for that is because they have so many other characters thrown in there. Like you got Falcon, Black Widow, Bucky, and the second one. Then you got bloody Iron Man, Spider Man, all these other people in it. So it's not just on the basis of Cap. Whereas this is a group ensemble, and they don't add that many people outside of them. But you know, it's based on, like we said, these character interactions and how they play off each other, and that's what makes the film so entertaining.
Yeah, it is more like the Guardians is like their own little universe. It's like James Gunn says, sort of outside of everything else, and it feels like there's a proper bit, proper sort of. So it all links together. So maybe arc is too strong of a word, but there are proper story threads that, you know, link the three together, and it feels like this third one has tied things up as well as you could, really.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think, you know, as Homer Simpson would say, everything's been wrapped up and needs the whole package.
That's it. That is it. So, Scott, you got anything else you want to plug and promote?
I got Scott and Paul Vampo. I guess we got a Frasier coming out, a Frasier related episode, and that'll soon be followed by part one. It's ended up being a two-part unintentionally, a part one of our SummerSlam 2004 recap. But it's been the first 30 or so minutes talking about, I don't know, something that happened in WWE. I can't remember what it was, plus the fact that we both wanted to go to Impact. So part one will be out soon, and then we're going to do some other SummerSlam related content as we round out August. Not much up to much else on the like opinion side of things, but I'm sure we will get together for a round back. We do have one planned, but we just need to make sure that Reese is free for all three of us to do it, because it's an idea that the three of us want to do. Obviously, the Diabetes UK thing is on my social media at ScottMcClendon1996 on Twitter. If you want to go find the link or share it, donate wherever you can. And you can find me on Eat Sleep Suplex Retreat at Suplex Retreat. I'm occasionally on ESR Central on a kind of revolving basis. I'm on every other week, maybe, or every couple of weeks. And then by some point at the end of August, I'll have a new episode of the Japanese wrestling show I do, East Meets West, which we'll probably be talking about the G1 Climax, which I'm a few days behind with, and I'm trying to avoid spoilers because inevitably I always fall a day or so behind, and I'm always playing catch up with this thing.
Cheers, Scott. Well, you can find me on Twitter and Instagram and Threads and all these other platforms at Carlos_Fire80. You can find us at Rogue_Opinions. You can catch up with me and Scott on our last pod, where we talked about our five favourite TV programmes of all time. Hopefully they've been more rank banks in the future. There's a football pod where I got together with Liam, Nathan and Reese before West Brom started losing all the time, and he gets upset again, as we talked about the upcoming season, who bought well, and who we expect the top four to be, and who we all expect the bottom three to be. And we've made notes, so we'll hopefully come back to that and see if any of us were right or laugh at how wrong we were. In a couple of weeks, hopefully me and Scott will be able to get together before he goes to London and all in, and speak about the first two episodes of Ahsoka, which we are really looking forward to. And that's about it for me at the moment.
There we go. When I come back from London, I've got like some time I've worked. Hopefully we can find some other things. We find some time in there to record one or two rank banks in there, as well as coming back with our what will be weekly reviews of Ahsoka. It'll be the first two episodes, and maybe Reese will join us for that first one. I know he's expressed interest in a bit, depending if he's actually available.
Yeah. Well, was it boys' characters we agreed to do next on rank bank?
Yeah.
So that's certainly one to look forward to.
Yeah, I thought it would be fitting, given that we got the spin-off coming at the end of September and everything. We were talking about the trailer, so it was fresh in my head, and I know all three of us are big fans of that show.
Yeah, I mean, who isn't? It's a brilliant show.
Well, anyone who doesn't want to see someone's penis explode or whatever, so which is understandable.
Exactly. Anthony hadn't seen it, and during the course of our F1 ranking podcast, we managed to convince him to watch it, and a few days later we got a message from him on our F1 chat saying, "Lad, you were right about the boys."
Yes, another successful conversion.
We did warn him, don't watch it with your girls.
this is strictly dad's show, for dad time. On his own. Make sure nobody walks in, because no matter what episode you're watching, and we're also having for the last 20 minutes, the minute someone walks in, that's the worst moment.
I remember watching an episode of True Blood, and there was a scene where this vampire was torturing another character who's tied up naked, and my sister just happens to walk in, and I'm thinking, it's not what it looks like.
I mean, I remember when we were doing our review of season 3, I made sure that it was a day that I knew people would be out of the house for at least a couple of hours before I sat down to watch the and make notes for the Herogasm episodes.
Yeah. You're watching this film and you're making notes about it. What's that, your friend? Love sausage.
I still do. Camera in the toilet.
Oh, God. All right. Okay, well, as we know, hiding things from your family isn't easy.
I was wondering where he was going to go with this.
I wasn't too sure either, to be honest.
Bye, everyone.
Bye.